This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Today, I'd like to talk a little bit about this practice of Zazen we do. Basically, we're told to sit down, face the wall, shut up, and watch your mind and breath. And I'd like to get into the weeds a little bit more about what we can do. It's important to have a stable and posture of ease, but not too tight, not too loose. Our bodies are instruments. We have many ways of calibrating our body with our eyes, ears, nose, tongue, our skin, and our mind. There is some people approach this posture as perhaps in an extreme way. There are those who practice the ascetic practices with Gautama Buddha, who before he was awakened, and they thought that through vigorous experience of pain in this body that you could wash away your karmic issues of existence. And the problem with that is our existence has countless lifetimes prior to this one. And so how do you add up just a little bit of karma times infinity? It would be a lot of pain to try to experience to get rid of your karma. So it's kind of a ridiculous approach to this practice. There is some pain that is felt in this practice, and to meet it is important as well, because in meeting it, we meet our life. There is pain in our life, and to meet a little bit of physical pain in our sitting, perhaps in the knees, preferably not in the back, but some pain to be able to be with it and to stay with it and to watch it and watch how what comes up in the mind actually helps us meet our circumstances that arise later in our day, in our life. There are four qualities of mind that are helpful in this practice. One is diligence. One is clear knowing. One is being mindful, observing, and another is free of desire and discontent. So when we attend to our posture and our breath, we're actually, with diligence, we're watching carefully some subtle qualities that are going on, like subtle qualities of our posture, subtle aspects of our breathing, how it feels through the nose, into the lungs, into the abdomen, feeling the lower abdomen swell and contract. We're, by diligently watching this, we're developing concentration. we're developing mindful attention. When we see what is going on with our body and our mind and our surroundings, we're engaged in clear knowing of what's going on. When we are troubled with the three poisons, unwholesome desire, anger, and delusion, then clear knowing disappears. And so when we are mindful, when we're attentive, and we come back to just watching our breath, then unwholesome desire and anger, hatred, and delusion are absent in that moment. Desire is one of the, can be looked at in many ways. One is we need desire in order to be diligent even. We need to do this practice. We need the desire to attend to this practice. There are other wholesome desires of wanting to learn, wanting to understand, wanting to see, wanting to help others. These are our wholesome desires. And there are a lot of unwholesome desires that arise. And part of clear knowing is being able to see when these unwholesome qualities are showing up. But there are also lesson ports or dharma gates to see them. One of the wondrous qualities of Jikoji is we're set in nature, in this fabulous valley of with lots of history, biological history, human history that goes back 15,000 years, maybe more. And when people show up here, it's I've noticed a sense of awe, a sense of relief of like finally arriving. And it's that to me is one of the most precious qualities of this place. And to me, it's something that I want to honor in each person, each of you that have been here, and new people that show up. And we're in a changing time where it's not even safe to call it a new normal. We're in changing times, environmentally, culturally, and we're also in changing seasons that are happening. And we're getting to a place in the next month, 2 months, 3 months, where things are going to open up probably more broadly. And one of the things I want to encourage about all of us here, that we be recognize that people who come here are people who are willing to share themselves and share perhaps their or experience spiritual sensitivity. There are all different kinds of sensitivities. And what to me is important about the sustaining of this place and that helps to welcome all those who come here is to honor each person's sensitivity and be aware of our own boundaries and their boundaries and treat this place with the dignity that people who come here, like for the first time, they get a special charge out of this place. So Jikoji has gone through many transformations and continuing changes as new people come and old people go, or other people move away, or people pass away. And to keep it fresh so that this amazing place gets properly appreciated and in its myriad ways. This practice of Zazen too is we bring mindfulness to this practice. We bring discernment to this, what we're doing, and we persist in our effort. To one way to give it away, our practice to give it away, is to be able to offer help to others, to be of assistance to others. In, for example, today after we eat, having help in washing dishes. And in helping others, there's actually collaboration that happens and bonding, sharing in practice, sharing in an experience, sharing in moving things forward. Yesterday, we had a Zazen Kai, and we did a work practice where there were, I think, 14, 15 of us that were weeding. And you might notice there are some exposed areas of the rocks in the common area here and in the courtyard. And it was just great to have that collaborative effort. So one of the blessings that I think we can, I want to bring up a blessing that might be of use to consider, and that is of continuity. There is, in our lives, we have the continuity of our breathing. We have the continuity of our heartbeat. We have the continuity of our friendships, of our work assignments, of our other many relationships. Of responsibilities, continuity of lineage. And to the continuity of this practice of mindfulness, of the diligence that we can tend to in what we do. The continuity of remembering the present moment, the continuity of following and tracking a person, what one is saying in a conversation. And actually, in often in our conversations, I've been prone to this, is when someone is talking, I'm thinking. And so when they're done talking, I say, and while you were saying that, I was thinking. and which means I wasn't really listening. But I would encourage you to try this, that actually all things are always available in this moment. I mean, this universe exists now. It doesn't exist 5 minutes ago or 5 minutes in the future. It is now. So all memory, all knowledge, all substance is of this just moment. So if you listen closely to what another person is saying, really, really listen and feel the totality of what is being said, if you can trust yourself to not have to think about, like, I have to remember, you know, there are several things that are said here and I got to remember, you know, how I'm going to respond, to just trust that you will appropriately respond if you thoroughly listen. You might be surprised at what comes out. It's different what comes out. Often we only partially listen and we have our own personal narrative that we need to share or we want to share. And when we share our own narrative, we're actually trying to reify or solidify our identity. Actually, our identities are very fluid. Like water, like atmospheric conditions, clouds. Our identities are fluid. We think that we sometimes feel they have to be certified, verified, justified. And it's possible to let those go. As I think we chanted this morning, when we don't hold on to our preferences, all things are possible. Part of this practice too is confidence. Confidence that we're going to be okay in the next moment. Like if we're not thinking about what another person is saying, if we actually let go to really listen, it really takes a deep confidence and it takes practice. You know, in order for us to be confident, truly confident, it isn't about a self that is confident. It is a flowing being in space-time that is flexible, responsive, sensitive to what is going on. And there are so many different kinds of boundaries that each person has. Like one of the boundaries I have is in this COVID time is not to be hugging people. However, you know, if you haven't seen a dear friend for a long time, there are times where it's like, that's what you have to do. So handshakes are out, where there are elbow bumps now. So there are all these different ways that we're shifting and adjusting, and it works. We're all here. So how to keep it all going smoothly, harmoniously. I want to read a passage from Thich Nhat Hanh, who, as everyone knows, passed away a couple weeks ago, wrote this Old Path White Clouds, the stories of the Buddha that are really wonderful. And I'm going to read a passage from it. After the Buddha had left home and practiced severe austerities and found that wasn't the way, he awakened, and pretty soon there were bhikkhus, that assembled around him. He met many interesting people who recognized him as a wonderful teacher and wanted to follow him. And they called themselves bhikkhus, which means beggar. They weren't monks or priests, they were beggars. And one meal a day, they'd go in the morning with their bowls through a village with their eyes cast down and stop at a door, at whatever door. And if there was an offering, there was an offering. If there wasn't, they would move on. They weren't selective about what offerings came to them. And then when everyone had something in their bowl, they went back before noon and ate their meal. But the Buddha came home and visited his family finally, and he spoke to them, a gathering of his father and Mahabhajavati and his wife and cousins and son. A lot of dignitaries there, as well as the bhikkhus. And he said, "Your Majesty and honored guests, all suffering can be overcome by looking deeply into things. All suffering can be overcome by looking deeply into things. On the path of awareness, we learn to follow our breath to maintain mindfulness. We follow the precepts in order to build concentration and attain understanding. The precepts are principles of living which foster peace and joy. Practicing the precepts, our ability to concentrate develops, and we are able to live with greater awareness and mindfulness. Mindfulness nurtures the capacity to illuminate the true nature of our mind and our environment. With that illumination comes understanding. Only with understanding can we love. All suffering is overcome when we attain understanding. The path of true liberation is the path of understanding. Understanding is prajna. Such understanding can only come from looking deeply into the true nature of things. The path of precepts, concentration, and understanding is the path which leads to liberation. But suffering is only one face of life. Life has another face, the face of wonder. If we can see that face of life, we will have happiness, peace, and joy. When our hearts are unfettered, we can make direct contact with the wonders of life. When we have truly grasped the truths of impermanence, emptiness of self, and dependent co-arising, we see how wondrous our own hearts and minds are. We see how wonderful our bodies, the branches and violet bamboo, the golden chrysanthemums, the clear stream and the radiant moon are. Because we imprison ourselves in our suffering, we lose the ability to experience the wonders of life. When we can break through ignorance, we discover the vast realm of peace, joy, liberation, and nirvana. Nirvana is the uprooting of ignorance, greed, and anger. It is the appearance of peace, joy, and freedom. So before we can love, we must first understand. And understanding arises when we can listen, to listen with our eyes, with our ears, with our body, with our mind. And I'll stop there. Thank you. Yes. Hi, Ross.
So what you just read, was that Thich Nhat Hanh or was that the text?
That was Thich Nhat Hanh's quoting the Buddha. So it comes from many different sutras and the Pali texts and his own imagination, I imagine.
So he's kind of like taking the stories and making a new story. It's not like a, here's a story and his commentary or something.
There are not a lot of footnotes in this. However, there is a dimension of wholeness that comes out that feels true and useful. So,
I was just kind of curious, like which.
Could you believe the Buddha would say these things?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I was just curious, like what you were reading.
Old Path, White Clouds. It's great. Hey, Tom.
Thank you, Jared. That was quite penetrating. What comes to my mind is that saying I heard from someone. I may not remember what it is you said, but I probably would hope that I remember how you made me feel. I'm wondering if you could, because as I keep saying, I know of another language, and I believe from what I hear through this language, that somehow there's a huge percentage of which the way we communicate is in body language, which is visual. Huge, like 70 more percent. And then something like 10 to 15% is in intonation, which is like ear. So I think what you're really saying is listening is being there in all our capacity with that other person and participating, which I think is really important. Participating, right? So it's like a, as you said, an instrument. And Luke and I are watching this great film by Ken Burns called Jazz. And one of the greatest things, it's an American art form. And one of the greatest parts of this art form is improvisation. I don't know necessarily in not what it is you're going to say. You don't necessarily know what I'm going to say. And in this space right here, this magical space, participatory communication, this music, can evolve. It's an amazing thing. So just to come back with this, I may not remember what it is you said, especially the density of what you said, but I might remember how it made me feel and open to more. I just thought maybe you might I'm sure you do have a take on that.
Yeah, listening is the full body experience. And with harmonizing, it's hard to know what's next. And though there's a lot of not knowing, there's also grounding in some qualities of attention that we give to being kind, of no killing life, no stealing, no lying, no sexual misconduct, no intoxication. And there are all different ways, of intoxication can be an ego-driven thing and not necessarily a drug-induced thing. And then there are cultural standards that we operate in. And just like the jazz musicians are keenly attuned, there is structure within that freedom that manifests. So our practice involves some of these guidelines that help to make the freedom possible. And it also, by working within the precepts, these guidelines, I think it also helps develop our sensitivity so that we see more in like you said, of I may not remember what you said, but I know how it made me feel. The feeling aspects are present. So there are some people who can feel just energies in a room. I don't quite have that sensitivity. There are some people that can read other people's mind. So be careful what you're thinking. I'm not of that, I'm a talent. But I've know people, I've sat next to people in here who can feel my energy, feel what's going on. And these kinds of people are helpful because they're able to sense some deeper, maybe sufferings that a person's going through. And it's useful to have these people on this planet. And it's important to cultivate these kinds of people, but it's also those folks can be overloaded with raw, you know, more vulgar kinds of energy. And so how do we, we're tuning ourselves in this practice. Kabe.
Yes. You gave an answer to my comments 2 weeks ago in front of you and Carolyn about understanding and compassion. But I want to, if I may, take it a little. It's kind of hard in these talks to go into some things a little bit. Maybe it's more like a private conversation. But I'd like to, in the context of this talk, maybe put a couple of things for your consideration. One is that this understanding that you're speaking of, and I think you mentioned it to Todd afterwards, is a wider sense of understanding. It's not like a mind-taught understanding that leads to compassion. And that's why Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva was the one who saw the truth of emptiness. So Carolyn 2 weeks ago said, compassion and wisdom are one, like, because you can't have one without the other. Like, you know, there's wisdom in compassion. There is compassion in wisdom, true wisdom. So I just have a hard time distinguishing like this hierarchy that understanding leads to kindness, because some people just feel kindness. You know, maybe a microsecond before they see the suffering in someone else, maybe that's a form of understanding. I agree with that. That's a wider sense of understanding. What I'm trying to say is, like, it's not like a linear A, B, C, D, E, F, then I'll be kind because I understood this.
Yeah.
Which tends to happen in some traditions, namely Zen, sometimes, you know. So I'm sorry if that's rebellious, but that's where I'm at. And, you know, I never shy away from saying my opinion.
You're right. There are people that are naturally compassionate. I find, though, when I am angry with another, that if I can more deeply understand what's going on in the situation, maybe the circumstance with another person, that my anger disappears. And it's then that I can be generous and kind. So it's actually when you're troubled, when I'm troubled, that it's understanding that comes first. When I'm angry at another person and well, give them love. Well, that's kind of hard to do. I'm mad. But if I understand the 12 links of codependent arising, that it's not just them and it's not just that moment, and there's a whole string of events that have brought this forward, that maybe with that kind of understanding, and it gives me pause that I can drop my anger actually then disappears. It's not like I have to repress or restrain anger. It's more like it's through understanding that the anger dissolves, and then love can appear. There are people who are just naturally full of love and in the harmony like you speak of. And understanding and wisdom are, in this, what I just read, are one. It is, that's where prajna comes from, is through understanding. And it's not just here, you know.
Right. I agree with you, Doug. You said beautifully. I just was trying to say that there are paths of love that lead to the same place. In your Sangha house, there's a saying that says, from Hebrew or something like, kindness is the highest form of wisdom.
Yeah.
Maybe you should take that sign down. I'm sorry. No, you know, there's two ways to see this. I'm saying there's different skillful means to get to the same point. There's not one way to arrive at the same point. That's all I'm trying to say.
Sure.
And thank you for putting up with my rude behavior here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So you're saying that through kindness, that maybe the anger would dissolve.
Yes. That's one way. That's why little kids are teachers. That's why little children, you know, they didn't go through the 12 links of dependent origination. You know, when you see a child, you know, see somebody hurting, sometimes you just go to them. I had my little niece come to me and hug me one time. She just sensed that I was sad.
Mm-hmm.
She just felt it. I know it makes
sure. She already understood it. Yeah.
Yeah. Kindness, the highest form of wisdom, you know. So anyway, I'm sorry, but thank you. I learned actually that passage from Thich Nhat Hanh was beautiful, and you are right. There's different ways. I just know my way.
Good. Thank you, Kaveh. Laura. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to touch on one of the things you were just saying about, you know, when you're feeling angry about something and, you know, trying to find paths to kindness and compassion. But I've been thinking a lot about anger, and I think the root of anger is fear. And it's the fear of a loss, the fear of abandonment, the fear of isolation, whatever it may be. But I think frequently anger is caused by fear. And so for me, I've been trying to think about that a lot, because one of the most difficult things, I think, is compassion for the self. I think compassion for others, to me, is very simple. You know, it doesn't feel like a stretch. Compassion and forgiveness of self is a completely different thing. I am really hard on myself, and I think many of us are. And so if anger is generated by fear, then fear is something that maybe we need to be able to assess and forgive ourselves for, and understand the root of that fear as a way of helping dissipate that anger. Because if you can not be afraid, then sometimes that anger just goes away, you know?
Yeah.
And part of that is being able to forgive ourselves, I guess, for our own feet of clay. And I think that's part of what this process is with the idea of, you know, delusions and desires, is spending, at least for me, has been spending time with looking at self-acceptance and what am I afraid of? Because I think that creates a situation where I may react in anger at something as opposed to the thing itself. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but thank you.
Beautiful. That, well put. That was very well put, Laura, of examining our fear and being a fundamental quality that helps to dissolve a lot of that. So thank you. That was a very eloquent. Thank you. Chris. Hi.
Hello, Doug. Thanks for your talk. Let's see, two things stood out for me more than the others. I think I can see how once you have understanding, compassion and kindness and love kind of naturally flow from that. You don't have to put a lot of effort into it. It just kind of is a natural consequence. So what takes the effort to me is the understanding part. that you can't just be passive about. You have to actively engage and have an active intention to do that. And not just to try to gain or increase understanding of things you already think you know or do know, but the things you don't know. That's where you really have to face some things like fear or anger or whatever it is to get past that and pierce through it to get a deeper understanding of what's going on. And I think you, as much as said that, one method you mentioned was, if I recall correctly, listening, not just with your ears, but with your entire body, I think is the way you put it. I think that's a good one. And I was just wondering if you had any other suggestions on that end of it.
Well, thank you, Chris. You're talking about this understanding is, like you said, is not a hard knowledge of like a what's the chemistry in this rock? It's more of a vulnerability in an understanding, being vulnerable to really understand what is going on in another person or in the situation. So vulnerability seems to also open the five aggregates, you know, the eyes, ear, and the five eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, consciousness, mind, consciousness, to be more vulnerable and sensitive. They talk about, one of the stories is of the vulnerability, imagining a cow with no hide and how vulnerable that animal would be, the ultra sensitivity and its way of knowing would be completely tender to the sun, to the wind, to the rain, to an insect bite. So this understanding part requires a deep vulnerability. And that deeper vulnerability is actually, I think, tied in with this deep love. it's all tied together. And there are so many different ways to approach it that, and each of us find our way and help each other find our way. So thank you, Chris. Karn.
And what I was going to say about understanding and love, I think you said it in the last two sentences, like exactly the same thing that I was going to say. But I'll try and say it again, rephrase it, and some comments on the talk that came to my mind. Like, first of all, I was like appreciating the passage you wrote, the passage you read. About like the first thing that the Buddha said when he went back to his family was that all suffering can be overcome by looking deeply into things. And I was appreciating how quickly he got to the point and how quickly he got over it. And just like said, whatever needed to be said in the first sentence. And then as you were talking about understanding, like it struck me that understanding, if you just break down the word, it's like standing under. And if you have to see something deeply, you have to look at their root, and you can only look at their root when you're standing under something. And so it kind of like tied in with cause and effect or dependent origination. But you can understand something when you see where it is coming from. You can see something where it is coming from when you stand under it. And then it kind of all tied together with looking deeply at things. And there was like this kind of conflict arose between two paths, a path of understanding and a path of love. Kindness. And I realized that maybe the path of kindness and love is even harder than the path of understanding, because it requires 100% trust in somebody who is like about to attack you, but you only have 100% love because you trust the greater dharma. And so I thought that the path of love is even harder than the path of understanding, because with the path of understanding, you can like kind of stand at a distance and look. But then you talked about the vulnerability in the path of understanding. To truly understand, you have to like come closer, and that requires love. Mm-hmm. And so it's all tied together. Mm-hmm. And so the path of understanding and the path of love are not separate. They're kind mm-hmm. of like very tied together. And so I was appreciating all of that. I was like, beautiful that you said yourself. So thank you.
Thank you, Karin.
Karin.
That's great. Especially in parenting, this is the possibility. One of the things that was told to me as an early parent is that parents are for children to sharpen their teeth. And that is what the virtuous aspect of being a parent is. You confront this possibility of unconditional love by, as you said, just be willing to take on incredible suffering. Mm-hmm. Which I wanted to say, suffering, anger are dharma gates. Mm-hmm. I believe that.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.